and welcome to the GVA Legal Podcast. My name is Jean Kambuni, and I'm your host. Micro, small, and medium-sized enterprises, MSMEs in short, account for 90% of businesses worldwide, 60 to 70% of employment, and contribute to 50% of the global GDP. MSMEs are the backbone of our societies. They contribute to local and national economies, and they sustain livelihoods, particularly for vulnerable populations, women, and youth. This week, the world celebrated Micro, Small and Medium-Sized Enterprise Day, or MSME Day, on June 27th. That was earlier this week. So we'd like to dedicate an episode of our podcast to MSMEs. To discuss MSMEs in Kenya, in studio with me is Joyce Njogu. Joyce is the head of consulting and business development at the Kenya Association of Manufacturers. Welcome, Joyce.
Thank you, Jean.
Thank you for joining us. And also in studio with me is my colleague, Lilian Mushuri. Lilian is an associate in the Corporate and Commercial Division here at Gikera and Vargama Advocates. Welcome, Lilian.
Thank you, Jean.
So to start us off, Joyce, could you kindly tell us about the Kenya Association of Manufacturers? Who are you and what do you do?
Thank you. The Kenya Association of Manufacturers is a business membership association for manufacturing and value-add industries here in Kenya. We're established in 1959, and we exist to create a common voice for our members so that we advocate for a favorable business environment and also act as an essential link where we link our members to governments, markets, development partners, and many other stakeholders that are relevant for their growth. But most importantly, we advocate for sustainable local manufacturing and also driving competitiveness of the manufacturers here in Kenya in relation to global standards. Thank you.
I have a quick question, and I don't think I'd asked this before. If I were to set up a small manufacturing facility from my home, maybe I'm going to do processing of shea butter, how would I be able to join the Kenya Association of Manufacturers? How would we find you?
So Kenya Association of Manufacturers, first of all, you'll find us very easily on the website, www.cam.co.ke for those who prefer digital route. We also are available on email through membershelpdesk@cam.co.ke. We also exist in 7 offices. Those who are in Nairobi can go to 2 offices, one in Westlands, at the CAM building opposite Westgate Mall. We are located there in the CAM building, and you'll find us on 5th floor. We are also in industrial area. Those in Mombasa, we have an office in Mombasa. We have an office in Kisumu as well. We have an office in Eldoret. We have an office in Thika. So those who prefer to use that line can do so. You could also call us directly through the CAM numbers that you find on the website. And you would just need to say you're interested in joining membership or in understanding manufacturing priorities so that you can participate in, you know, setting up your products and services in a more relevant manner and gain support from CAM. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Now, I'm sure that you have a really large database of members, and you have members that fall within the micro, the small, and the medium-sized enterprises, just the full MSME range. What is the role of MSMEs in the economy of Kenya? What type of contribution do they make?
MSMEs are quite critical in the economies, not just in Kenya, but globally. You alluded to it in your earlier presentation, where at least they contribute over 50% of GDP. In Kenya, MSMEs contribute the highest job rate and even growth rate of jobs. For instance, you'd find that they're growing at a higher rate than the normal jobs because of the opportunities that they have in terms of innovations, getting out into the market quickly, diversifying to meet the needs of markets. So there's a lot of demand growing in Kenya as we grow into a middle-income country, where people are demanding for different types of products. They're looking for variety. They have global influences on the kind of products they would want to use. So SMEs are increasingly finding opportunities to co-create with the market products that could serve them. So with that, they're able to be engaged economically. They're able to link with markets and at the same time offer jobs for Kenyans and the young people. We've also looked at different ways of categorizing SMEs, and you alluded to the vulnerable ones. We have the women, we have the youth that we're engaging through youth employment programs, where we're either placing them in jobs or helping them to get into entrepreneurship. We have the women where we're encouraging them really to plug into an association and also contribute to their agenda in terms of how women are supported. At the same time, building their capacity to be able to be productive and access markets easily. So from an SME perspective, they are quite critical in the economy, knowing that the majority of businesses are SMEs anyway. Of course, we have the Micro and Small Enterprise Act, which you said that Lillian will talk to. It defines what the micros are and the small companies are, and especially those from a manufacturing orientation. So we encourage a lot of SMEs to actually become manufacturers. A lot of them are actually value adding, but they don't describe themselves as manufacturers. And we are available to just show them that they're actually playing a critical role in the economy. Thank you.
If I could just double back to something you said, in your definition of who would be a member of the Kenya Association of Manufacturers, you alluded to the word value addition. So if I was to think of myself as a micro enterprise, how would I know that I fall within the term manufacturing?
Thank you. I know the term manufacturing has been quite confusing to a lot of small businesses. For instance, I'll just use examples so that you're value adding a mango into a juice and you're squeezing juice out of it and selling. You're actually processing mango juice. You could do it for personal use. At that point, then it's just for local consumption. But then if you commercialize and say you're selling it, then you are getting into value addition. There are those who are, you know, probably doing clothes. For instance, the tailors who are doing clothes, they are also in value addition. You're adding value to a material and making clothes, designing them, and people can use them. We have those who are making, let's say, beauty soaps. They are not aware they're actually value adding. We have a lot of women, for instance, in the communities who are being trained to do the liquid soaps. They don't know they are value adding. So we have so much that is value adding, but most people think that's just hustling and local work, and they don't know it's something that if it's done well, it's scalable, it can be standardized, and they can access different types of markets and grow their business and, you know, even grow their enterprise. So there are so many examples, but I find that a lot of people think manufacturing is when you have a big metal processing factory or cement, and that's the only time then you qualify to be called a manufacturing. At this point, we wish to demystify that and welcome SMEs to join our manufacturing SME hub and just learn more about, first of all, identifying who they are as an enterprise and what would make them competitive and plug and play in the economy as an equal player, as part of inclusion in how we support businesses to grow. Thank you.
Thank you for that, because I've just realized that is also a misconception that I had. I think maybe a lot of television has made us think that when you say manufacturing, you're thinking about just what you said, a really big factory that has these steel machines and does production on a large scale. But even if I was to just narrow it down and come down to the idea that I said, maybe I'm processing shea butter and making it into a cream and different product lines, then I am on a small scale a manufacturer. If I grow my groundnuts and then I process them and make them into peanut butter and then I package that peanut butter for sale, then I also am a manufacturer and I fall within your definition. So I'll go to the next question. And here I wanted to find out about the unique challenges that MSMEs face in Kenya. What unique challenges do we have that are unique to our Kenyan context or even our African context that really MSMEs grapple with?
Well, from an African context and cutting across different sectors, the biggest gap we've seen is actually information, lack of information that is useful to an SME in order to serve a market. And you find that a lot of people don't know who's offering what services and who needs what product, and then and at what time, at what price, and then they find that they're struggling in the market. Others have the information, but there's the challenge of interpreting it to use it in a way that is useful to the business. You know, making decisions from information. If I'm given data statistics about, for instance, Congo, what does that mean to my business? And, you know, how should I then upgrade and serve that market? So that's one of the biggest gaps that we've seen that really cuts across all SMEs. And not just SMEs, sometimes even large companies. You know, if you're quick to get information early, you have a first mover advantage in innovating. Probably you've understood the trends and you can, you know, do your innovation quickly and be the first in the market. But unique to manufacturing, of course, we have issues of getting raw materials. It's not consistent, and sometimes, especially in agro products, but also across other sectors, we've seen, and it was more apparent during the COVID time when, you know, movement of goods was an issue. And now with the Russia crisis, we've seen also, you know, when the supply chains constraints come in, you find then access to raw materials being quite a major challenge. So it could also be access based on taxation, because a lot of manufacturers import their raw materials, and you find the price fluctuations then affect their pricing, and they are not able to compete competently. The other area, which of course is a cliche statement, is lack of finance. So we always ask, is it lack of finance? Is it lack of appropriate finance that's suitable for an SME? And eventually we are looking at, is it affordable? Is it accessible? Are there conditions that are favorable to an SME, especially in terms of their product life cycle, so that they're able to match their cash flows with when the requirement to pay up the loans is needed? And we find that some people may not know there could be some providers who have good financial solutions that are suitable for SMEs. You have a grace period that allows you to actually plug in and use the money to first invest. And then when you start receiving your cash flows, that's when now they're willing to take up your, to ask you to pay up the loan. So you're real partners, and that's what we're looking for in terms of solutions, real partners that can understand your business and your structure, unique ways of meeting your obligations. The other area, of course, is technologies, whether it's automation or processing technologies. We find that some people have been small, rudimentary for many, many years, and they really don't know they could improve. And we like using the example of GCOS. We've heard so many GCOS. Kenya has been original in making GCOS for many years, but we are seeing new GCOS coming even from South Africa, Egypt, and others that are really well refined, very good finish, and they kind of start looking better, but they serve the same purpose. And you see, okay, if we were able to get better processing plants, even if small in nature, or common user facilities where a few SMEs can aggregate and use a particular equipment for the sake of proper utilization of equipment and also scaling up. So that's a big gap where some of it is perception related, others it's just lack of growth ambitions. Others is just comfort around staying with the same product over the years and not innovating. And that's one of the areas that we've noticed is a big challenge, and we are looking to partner. And there are many partnerships that have come through of machinery and technologies that can be affordable to SMEs. And we have even some countries offering to offer credit lines and link them to technology providers so that an SME can start well. You start small with a small machine. And I like giving examples of crisps processors. Those who make crisps, you know, whether it's banana crisps, even Mamangina Drive in Mombasa, there's somebody with very nice cassava. That person can actually grow and get another equipment that can do bulk, and they can start selling in the local community. Then over time, they grow and, you know, and people are making money out of crisps. If you go to the supermarket, there's a whole big shelf on just snacks. So you can see that's a growth area, but there are some SMEs who have seen that and they've grown. They have even gone ahead and bought land, which brings the next challenge, lack of land space or space to process their things. And people always hiding or doing it, you know, behind the scenes or borrowing facilities to be able to drive their processing. So we find some SMEs are able to grow and actually get land and put up a warehouse and you know, from just humble beginnings. So we have a lot of success stories, and those stories should be told. The other area, of course, is issues of standardization and getting certifications for quality, whether it's labeling and so many other things. And we work with the likes of Kenya Bureau of Standards to support SMEs in that. I'd mentioned innovation, but alongside patenting, a lot of SMEs don't patent or put trademarks in a way that they can also commercialize their assets and grow. And there are many challenges, but I wish to say policy and the regulatory space really is another big area of challenge. And it's also a mindset where sometimes SMEs feel it's too much, for instance, to pay tax, or it's too much to do this. And we've been working with different people, KRA and others, to just look at, does that taxation really look at the SME's scope of work and their, you know, their thresholds in terms of revenue? Is it really necessary? So we've been looking at those aspects so that all regulators do not have one standard way of accessing or taxing or charging businesses or different licenses, but also just cognizant of the startups, those who are micro, those who are small. So kind of a threshold approach so that people are, there's some form of equity in the way we engage SMEs. So that's just a few of the challenges, but there are so many, I can't exhaust them here. But also I've tried to share some solutions of what CAM is doing to support SMEs. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And I'll double back to that question that, because I want us to end this with talking about how we can make MSMEs in Kenya more resilient. But before we talk about that, I want to bring Lilian into the conversation. You talked about regulation at the policy and at the legislation level as a challenge that MSMEs face. And that's in two times, that it is either punitive or excessive or even that it exists. So I want to talk about the MSME Act 2012. Lilian, does the MSME Act 2012 need an update? We're in the year of our Lord 2023. So it is many years since it was passed. And if so, what types of updates should we propose?
Thank you very much, Jean, for that question. I appreciate the provisions of the MSE Act and the various policies that have been formulated to ensure its compliance and implementation. There is, however, a need to update the Micro and Small Enterprises Act 2012 on the definition of the small and micro enterprises. This is because definition plays a critical role in eligibility for financial accessibility and other support programs. For instance, a micro enterprise under the Act is defined as an enterprise whose annual turnover does not exceed 500,000 Kenya shillings and which employs less than 10 people. Further, a small enterprise is defined as an enterprise whose annual turnover ranges between Kenya shillings 500,000 to 5 million and which employs between 10 and 50 people. So the question that we ask ourselves is, how about an organization whose annual turnover is, let's say, below 500,000 Kenya shillings, but has around 20 employees? Then where does that kind of enterprise fall? Is it a micro enterprise or is it a small enterprise? So I think there should be another criteria for defining small and micro enterprises other than just relying on the number of employees, the turnover, and the registered capital to define the small and micro enterprises. Lastly, the MSE Act aims to support both formal and informal enterprises. The Micro and Small Enterprises Act should make formalization of SMEs mandatory, as most laws and regulation target the formal SMEs. This makes it so easy for the informal enterprises to exploit the lack of oversight thereof. And so we find challenges such as there's a challenge in the collection of taxes because you cannot collect taxes from an unregistered enterprise. And this is a problem because, as you can see, the current government is very keen on collecting taxes. This is a challenge. And also, it's also difficult to establish whether an organization is selling prohibited goods and to its customers. There's no way to standardize the products, as basically it's like it doesn't exist to the government. Also, we find that making it mandatory for formalization of SMEs is a solution to most of the challenges that Ms. Njogu has mentioned. For instance, the access to financing. This is because it's easy to finance a formal enterprise because it exists under the law. But for informal enterprises, it's hard for financiers to lend them money as they do not exist under the law. So those are some of the amendments I think should be made under the Micro and Small Enterprises Act.
Thank you for that, Lillian. Joyce, I want to double back to you on this. Let me throw you a little curveball and ask, you know, sometimes you can craft laws from an ivory tower perspective. In practice, does the definition of who a micro or small or medium enterprise is affect the practice or how such an enterprise operates? Why? For two reasons. One, when a person begins an enterprise, they're not really looking about what definitions they have. They're just figuring out their reality as it comes to them, the business as it comes to them, and then they grow or they shrink depending on the external environment that they operate in. Has definitions impacted the practice of how MSMEs run and affected them, whether positively or negatively?
Yes, I agree with Lillian. It actually affects how you operate, both positively and negatively. For instance, when it comes to filing of VAT, we have a threshold there of any business around 5 million. And if your mindset is that you don't want to register, you'll be operating below 5 million so that nobody really interferes with you in terms of charging you. That may look like a positive, but on the flip side, it's a negative because you can't do business with large enterprises that must register VAT and then you find you're locked out in the market and such. So an SME, to some extent, is given a choice there. And that's where now we build their capacity and say, look, this is an opportunity to just help you start. But meanwhile, you need to grow to an extent that you have to do business along the supply chain. And sometimes this will be voluntary compliance that is at least not necessarily compulsory, but it's voluntary so that you can expand your access to market. The other area would be, for instance, licensing. You may benefit when, you know, they say business of this threshold don't need to pay this kind of license and you may benefit. These are all operational. You could also, by virtue of definition, access cheaper space, maybe through the Kenya Industrial Estates, or cheaper financing through companies that would say we are supporting businesses of this nature, and you could access that by virtue of a certain definition. On the other hand, you may also be clustered as needy, and then people say, no, we don't want to do business with these kinds of people, and you find you've been secluded just because you fall within that category of people. For instance, the definition that you could be up to a maximum of 10 employees, somebody may think that is related to turnover, but really we've seen new businesses coming up that are high in technology, digital spaces, with one or two employees that are direct employees and the rest are outsourced. And such a business could be discriminated, yet they could be very big in terms of the scope of work that they're delivering and the turnover they're commanding. So sometimes, and I agree with Lillian, actually, these definitions need to be revised and actually given different perspectives, because we have also, from manufacturing perspective, a small business in the metal sector is not the same as a small business in the food sector. So the kind of capital employed is totally different. Yet somebody in the metal sector could be injecting $1 billion and they are seen as very small and not influential in the market. So I know with the current hustler kind of discussions, we are still on the lower end of the current act on who a small business is. And that was deliberate for affirmative action. So then the programs around affirmative action will only target these smaller ones. And then you find the medium companies that are ready for growth, they're ready for just a little facilitation or injection to shoot, are neglected. And probably they would turn around a number of jobs created faster, but then there's a deliberate effort from other development partners to support that group. So it's up to the influencers like Kenya Association of Manufacturers and the lawyers and other partners to look at different categories of SMEs and then source for partnerships to help them unlock value for their next level of growth. So definitely definitions are very critical in how SMEs operate. Thank you.
Yeah. So, and then the last question I'm going to ask you is a holdover from what Lillian also said. She talked about informalization, the fact that many businesses are informal, they're not registered. And that also speaks to the lack of knowledge about patents and trademarks and securing the intellectual property. How can we help MSMEs in this regard? And I don't know whether this intervention would have to be targeted at another level, maybe students, educating people on starting companies and being entrepreneurs. But how can we ensure that businesses become formalized? Because that will also help with access to finance. Once you're formal, you'll be able to have books of accounts, which now you can use to access financing from a formal institution. So how can we help MSMEs to be formal, bearing in mind that the idea to start a business doesn't usually come with me thinking about whether I should be registered as a company, a business name, how I will trade, which license I need?
Yeah, thanks. That question is quite critical, and it's been asked for many years, and different people have tried to do studies on why SMEs choose to remain informal, because a lot of them actually choose to remain informal. And we see that some of them have some genuine reasons that the government has worked very hard to try and resolve, one of which is access to government offices, registration of companies, some of it being expensive, access to lawyers also to guide them. You know, they find that so expensive and they really feel they don't have the money or the capacity to engage. And even their negotiation capacity is low and they feel vulnerable when it comes to engaging, you know, the systems formally. So those ones, we find their reasons are genuine and they just need capacity building and some confidence levels. And we've seen government coming up with e-platforms like the e-citizen to just make it easy for you to register from your house or from your phone or, you know, wherever you are, so that, you know, that complication of I have to go to town, get to the city council office or the county government, you know. So you remove all those barriers of movement or location, and then you go online. So I believe the digital space in terms of the e-citizen or e-government services is a very, very progressive agenda that has come through. The other one, of course, is the payment solutions. And you've seen the proposals from government on how to access information through the digital platforms, whether it's the e-commerce platforms or the money payment platforms, the digital payments platforms, or even just those invoicing platforms so that they can track businesses. But this is more from, you know, from a punitive perspective of we have seen you online and we need you to pay tax. But if we look from just a proactive perspective, is to also train SMEs that, you know, when you register online, as much as it comes at a cost, the benefit thereof is much, much more than the cost. And so helping them coming up with costing structures so that I know if I pay 20,000 for this and that, or I pay to Kenya Bureau of Standards 20,000 for my product to be registered so that I can be in the market formally, I'm able to be recognized by consumers, I build trust for my product, I build my brand. And therefore, that cost becomes really minimal in terms of how you can grow your business. But we find a lot of the SMEs prefer to be quiet. They don't want those reminders that it's time to pay tax or it's time to pay these. And the perception is that they're growing. Some of them make a lot of money. They are millionaires, but they still don't want to come to the formal space. And these are mindsets that then we are working hard to change those mindsets. But again, government and associations that have big databases of members, because you'll be surprised, SMEs have so many associations. They could be called probably Chamas, or they could be called, you know, this empowerment group or this other. Most of SMEs have a group somewhere. So those groups can be used to educate them on formalization and then attached to an incentive, maybe some financing or some market, like what AGPO did, the Access to Government Procurement Services, really brought in a lot of informal businesses into the formal space, especially women and young people who said, okay, I want to do business with government. How do I register? And they went ahead and registered. So such incentives, even with the county governments to go to the grassroots level, and promise people an incentive that makes them say, okay, if I want to access this school and support them with supply of this product or the other, which then becomes a big market for me, I need to register in their platform and all that. So in my belief, these digital platforms are the biggest turnarounds for people formalizing and just generally as a community learning that is good to, you know, to do good and operate in the right space and also just pay taxes so that the government can also operate and run for the rest of for other services that it needs to offer. So that education is critical, and we continue to do so with other partners. The government already has institutions like the Micro and Small Enterprise Authority that's constantly working around formalization. We have the Kenya Industry Research and Development Institute working around that. We have Kenya Industry Estates, We have partners like Kenya Intellectual Property Institute. So there are so many people working in that space. We encourage also universities, like you said, as they educate students and help them innovate and come up with projects, they could encourage them to register. As you innovate, you register both the business and also patenting so that you're already in the formal system. Like we do with IDs, you turn 18, you know, I should register and get an ID. So you're already in the government system. So it should just be a natural progression when you want to start a business. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And I like those low-hanging fruits that already businesses have things that they have that collectivize them. They already have groups and people already know to go to those groups for information, for education on how to go about your business cycle. So using those and targeting them as places for education, I think is a very innovative way to think around how to get the people where they are. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. I'd like to thank my guests, Joyce Njogu, the Head of Consulting and Business Development at the Kenya Association of Manufacturers. Thank you, Joyce.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And I'd also like to thank my colleague, Lilian Mushiri. Lilian is an associate at the Corporate and Commercial Division here at Karen Vatgama Advocates. Thank you, Lilian.
Thank you, Jean.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm your host, Jean Kambuni. Tell us what you think about this episode in the comment section of our social media pages or on email. Our email address is info@gvalawfirm.com. You can also follow Gikera and Vatgama Advocates on social media. You can find us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as GVA Law Firm. Thank you again for joining us on the GVA Legal Podcast. Let's get